Three. And we're live, Ryan Bieber. What's going on, buddy? How are you?
I'm good, man. How you doing? Good to be on here with you.
I am on top of the world right now. I couldn't be better, to be honest with you.
Saw you and Mac are officially partners now.
Yeah, man. That's really awesome, wonderful. Man. So I've been, to give everyone a little bit of an understanding, I was actually doing most of the, ownership director of operations work, so to speak, like 3 months before we even made this partnership. So it was kind of a thing where we were going back and forth with the lawyers. My lawyer, Laura, who's actually a really good friend of my mom's, she wasn't experienced in that sort of, operating agreement. So she really couldn't help us out. And I felt bad because I really wanted to pay her. And she was like, nah, you don't get to pay me anything. And we kind of just wasted like 2 months. So I was like, oh, shit. So Mac finally, he got us like a real proper lawyer who's been with the company for about like 3 years now. So I've been good, man. I've been working my ass off. And I posted on my story the other day that I was an intern for this company, man, sophomore year, like when me and you were living together. And it's just crazy to see that I visualized that into me taking ownership and seeing value in this company and it turning into fruition. So I'm really content about that, dude. Really content.
Yeah, man. I'm super pumped for you because, you know, talking to you all throughout college, I knew you were a guy that was super passionate about marketing, especially in the digital space. And I'm just happy to see that, like, you know, you're part of something that is your passion and you really have a drive for it and being successful at it. So
yeah,
I would say I wish you nothing but the best, but like, I know you're going to do good. Like,
yeah,
I know the type of guy you are and the type of drive you have. So
yeah.
I'm not really hoping for anything. Like, you're going to make it happen.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And dude, shout out to you, bro, with fucking Oracle. That's crazy. Are you in Texas right now or where are you?
No, I'm currently in PA still at my parents' house, actually, my high school and elementary school bedroom right now.
Nice, nice.
It's missing my wardrobe that's packed up in a U-Haul box in our front driveway. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I'll be down there moving into my apartment. June 11th is when my lease starts. So I'll probably start my drive down around the 8th or 9th, depending on how quickly I want to get that done. But yeah, man, yeah, I'm pumped for it. One negative thing is, like, we just got told that we're going to be online for the beginning part of it with everything going on. But my roommate, Josh De Leon, he actually went to Altoona. You might recognize
him. I probably met
him. Yeah, he's a real cool guy, real smart guy, too. And I said, hey, man, like, do you want to, you know, try and get out of this lease because it didn't start yet. So, you know, we'll be out of the application fee, yada, yada, which would suck, but whatever. And I told him, like, you know, I still want to go to Austin, you know, like, I still want to, you know, move out.
Best, man.
Yeah. I still want to go to this, like, a new city, get my own place, be out of my parents' house and, like, have my own life. Right. And, you know, see where it takes me. And he's like, dude, I'm 100% on board. Like, I don't care that we're going to be online for the first part of it. Like, let's go to Austin. Let's do everything like we were planning to do originally. I'm like, all right, bet. Like, we're going to do that. Let's do this, man.
So I remember seeing your guys' place, and are you guys still going to live in that house?
Yeah, well, we were going to live in that house if Hunter was going to come down with us because it was 3-bedroom, but he unfortunately couldn't move to Austin anymore. So we're like, all right, we're just going to get an apartment. And our apartment it's super nice. It's 2-bed, 2-bath, washer, dryer in unit, gym on site. And it's actually like walking distance from Oracle, and Oracle owns the apartment. So we got like
the
original rent's like $1,500, right? And like we get $1,300 now. So we're paying like $650 a month each to like be walking distance from work and like an 8-minute Uber drive from the heart of Austin City.
Yeah. That's wonderful,
so it's pretty cost effective in a good spot.
Yeah. Dude, it's crazy because I was in, the exact opposite position when I graduated high school. I had no idea what I wanted to do. I had zero drive whatsoever. I think my GPA at the time was like a 3.3. I mean, which is not bad, but it's not like up to my kind of caliber that I hold myself now, like a certain standard. And it's really wild what you can do when you work towards a goal and you see it slowly by slowly. You like Tom Segura has a new special. Like, have you heard of him? He's a ball hog right now.
I know Netflix. Tom Segura. Yeah.
He's hilarious, dude. He's one of my favorite comedians actually right now. He's so funny, man. He's just, he's very, he doesn't, he, See, the thing about him and Kevin Hart are night and day, right? Because Kevin Hart uses like all these like flashy animations, and I don't necessarily think Kevin Hart is that funny. Tom Segura is just playing what you see is what you get, and he just writes solid bits. They're hilarious. And he made a really good point, dude. He was saying that, you know, if your dream, you can manifest it and see yourself doing what you want, you also have to understand that it's not going to go exactly how it's planned, but you can still reach that dream. You just have to go through the bumps and the ups and downs. And that's exactly what's happened, dude, with you and me and Hunter. I was actually talking to him yesterday, dude. He's still in a PA, and he's working towards like a management position right now, which is fantastic. And he was actually doing this, a new MMA gym opened up near him, and he's going to be doing that quite a bit. And
Dude, he really wants to give MMA a shot. And I mean, I told him, like, dude, if that's what you want to do, like, now's the time to do it, because you're not going to be 22 years old forever. And like, you know, you get to your late 20s and 30s, and man, like, you could, this now's the time to do it. Like, if you want to really go at it, like, go at it hard, like, when you still are young and athletic, and it's easier for you to train than when you're 30, you know, like, do it, man. Like, if that's what he wants to do, I think he'd do it.
What's crazy about Hunter, dude, is I remember specifically when I was pledging, and it was like, man, it had to be like December. So it was the last month of pledging, and it wasn't like hell week. So we still were caught up on our sleep, but we were still just getting pissed, like, you know, just hazed out of us. It was horrible. Yeah. Like ice baths, people were like throwing mayonnaise in each other's faces. Like it was a carnival, right? So I remember there was like fight night where people were like, it started off as like slap boxing, you know, like that kind of stuff. And then it went to like people were just straight up fighting. And I remember Hunter came in one time. It was a beautiful day in December. It wasn't even that cold. We're all outside, and we're just like in a little circle, like in a cockfighting ring. You know what I mean? And I remember Hunter steps in, and Rico, you know, he's like Slender Man, right? He's so lanky and he's so skinny.
Yeah, he's like 6'3" and like huge, like wingspan.
Yeah,
like,
and he's like, he's not even like, he doesn't have that much muscle, but he's like a John Jones where he's just so lanky. He can like reach you when you can't reach him, right? Mm-hmm. And I remember, like no one could beat Rico because no one could match that reach. So I remember Hunter came in and he just straight up got in the like, he was like Tyson, just bobbing and weaving. And then I don't know if they were like throwing punches. I think they were just like grappling a little bit. But dude, Hunter was he looked nice fighting. Mm-hmm. And he's like, Hunter has a good build for, I don't know if he's going to do like 170 or like welterweight or middleweight, but I think he can do either or. I mean, he's a really athletic guy. He's done, you know, some sports in the past. And I mean, hats off to him. The thing I will say about fighting is, you know, not that like I could ever do it, because I love watching fighting, as you know, but I couldn't do it 100% just because, like, that doesn't appeal to me. Like, being a fighter is you know, I'm just not that type of guy. Even though I would like to fight, like, if it happens, I'm not saying I'm a pussy, but I'll definitely stand up to myself. It's like, yeah, I can't put 100 into this, and if someone else is giving 100%, I'm giving 50, I'm going to get knocked out to the floor and lose brain cells, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I do miss, like, doing jiu-jitsu, man.
Yeah,
man. We had tuna. That shit was so fun. Like, not only for like just learning, like, oh wow, like, you know, this shit works. Like, if you need to use it, like, it's an effective tool to like defend yourself. But also like your mindset. It's like, it's kind of like a little game of chess. Like, me and you had such good sparring, dude. Like,
it was so much fun.
We just learned so much from each other, and like really, you know, like figured out, you know, what we're good at and what our strengths are, and it was an awesome experience. Like, I do miss that about college, like just having a readily accessible club to be like, all right, I'm good to do jiu-jitsu, you know?
Yeah, dude. It was like, so we were at this club, and I think it was like near what, like Penn Building and like center of Altoona, something like that. Mm-hmm. And it was like, what, $20 a month, probably even less than that. And we would just go in this like little dojo, and we had about like 10, 15 people. And I know, like, the girl Silvana, if you remember her, like, she was that little Brazilian girl, and the sensei.
And she was good, dude. Like, she could fuck you up. Like,
she was
if
nuts,
she got dude. In, if she got in close on you, dude, like, she could definitely put you in a submission over. That was not
like
very
fun. Mini Ronda Rousey. Dude, I remember, I felt so salty because, you remember this? I was talking to the sensei, and I think he was going over, like, a Kimura or, like, some real tactical move. Something with a shoulder lock, maybe Americana or Kimura. And I straight up like called him a pussy to his face, like not literally, but he's cranking my arm back, right, or forwards, whatever it goes, and I'm like, he's like, so you're supposed to tap now, and I'm like, okay, but like I don't feel any pain, like you can go harder. He's like, tap now, and I'm like, I'm not gonna tap if I don't feel pain, like you need to like do it correctly. And he's like, no, you need to tap. I'm just like showing a move. I'm like, no, you need, like, I don't feel any pain. Like, just do it. Like, he's like, are you sure? I'm like, yeah. So he's like, I'm just like calling him out in the front of the class saying he doesn't have any strength. And dude, I don't know if you remember, but like everyone like paused and stopped and they're like, yo, like submit, like just let him do what he wants.
Just tap, dude.
yeah, just tap. And I was like, oh my God, now I'm this asshole. So I went over and I apologized. I'm like, yeah, sorry, sensei, or whatever the fuck I called him. I was like, I didn't mean to like embarrass you, but it's just, you know, I wanted to just feel the pressure and I wanted you to apply the proper squeeze that you needed to. That's all really what I wanted to do. He's like, yeah, no problem, whatever. So whatever. But I really missed those roles. I mean, jiu-jitsu was you know, it's something, it's so crazy. Like, it's the best martial art, I think, because, like, I don't know if you remember, but when Matt was, like, super drunk. So, we had this one kid in Altoona. We were at Penview Suites, and we were in the bottom floor, 102, right? We're 102? Something like that, I think. I don't know.
Yeah. Definitely. What, it was 100-something. I think it was 102, dude. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was 102 as well. And we had the biggest space in the entire complex. Like you had, so it was the 500s, the 400s, 300s, 200s, and the 100s were the ones that were just renovated, built. So it was beautiful. And we each had our own room, own shower. It was perfect. And I remember we had this one kid, Matt Sickle, who I love him to death. He's my boy, but sometimes he gets a little liquored up. And he was like feeling a little hostile, feeling a little ballsy. And I don't know what we were fighting about, but he was like play grappling with me. And I'm like, oh, you want to like test this? All right, bet.
Yeah. So, like you want to go?
Yeah. So he like tries to take me down or like, I don't know. And I sprawl, I get on top of him. And then I just like full mount him immediately. And I just like do an arm bar. And then like Chalk, our Indian roommate, comes out. He's like, oh, he's doing WWE. Oh shit. I was cracking up. I was like, at that point, I didn't even do the arm bar that hard. I was like, man, this is fucking some Brock Lesnar shit right here. This is nuts.
I remember, dude, like you put him in that arm bar so quick. And I was like, yeah, Matt, that was going to happen, dude. Like, you don't know what you're doing. Like,
yeah, this is real life, dude. You better get acclimated real quick or you're going to be done.
Yeah. And it's not like Matt's a small guy. He's pretty big. No,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. He's big, dude. He's,
it's not like he's weak either. Like, he's big, like, you know, like, just like a big lumbering guy, like, you know, yeah. Like, and he just, you know, you knew what you were doing and he didn't know what he was doing. And that's what it came down to.
Dude, we used to smoke so much. And especially me, I used to blaze like every day. And now it's like, I mean, I have a pen. Hold up. Do I have it right here? Yeah. I have this little baby right here. I got, because I have that medical card now. And this is like a disposable. That's all they had because of the corona. Like, everyone's ordering online. So that's the only like inventory they had. But it's like, you know, I think.
What was that process like for you?
So it was really simple, man. I mean, I don't know how it's going to interfere with Oracle. So I don't really want to talk about it like on your behalf because I don't know, like, if you want to, I don't want you to get in trouble, you know? But for me, how it was is there was three steps, right? And I was kind of skeptical because my one intern, I heard about it from this guy named Thomas Cavalcante. Shout out to Tommy. Tommy boy, because I love this guy. I mean, he's great. He's like really, really young, really hungry, like real estate entrepreneur, like mindset, just like us. Like he's awesome. And I saw on his post on his Instagram the other day, like a month ago, he's like, yeah, you know, you could get medical cards for like 150. Hit me up. And I'm like, okay, like this is legit. So I'm okay. So I texted the number, and it was this guy Ethan from Check PA. Now Check PA is like the the filtering system that goes through all of the cards to make sure like you're legitimate. And it's kind of like the middleman between you and the doctor to make sure that you get the proper paperwork and everything processes right. So I'm like, okay, cool. So what's this process look like? And he says, it's three steps. So the first thing is you have to fill out this Google form, which is like, you know, just name, date, birth, whatever. Second step is you actually have to schedule a consultation with the doctor and have an interview with them. And I was like, okay, cool. So you have to download this app.
You got to definitely have at least one touch point with a doctor in that whole process.
I never had this happen before. It was like, wow, this is actually pretty funny. And the doctor's name was like Dr. Suri. It was like some Indian name, Vihadi. I don't know, but something like that. And really nice guy. And he's like, okay, what do you need the card for? And I'm like, well, you know, I have insomnia and like anxiety, which I mean, I had before, but I don't really, you know, it's not a problem now. And he's like, okay, this is fine. So it's going to be $100 to the state, and it's going to be $50 to me on behalf of me giving you this consultation and the card. And I'm like, okay. And that was it. That was just the conversation. We didn't go into like specifics. He was just like, okay, what do you need it for? I told him, and he's like, okay, here it is. It was a 5-minute call, dude. It was really, it was a little longer than anticipated, because I was just kind of like buttering him up and warming him up, like making him feel good about him.
Like, yeah. Like you didn't know like how cross-examined you were going to be.
Exactly. Him. Yeah. So I needed to just play, you know, as safe as I could, and not, you know, cause dude, there was this one girl who hit me up, and she's ridiculous. So let me finish before I go into another story. Let me finish this. So then I get the card in the mail 5 days later, 150, and it has where is it actually right now? I'll show you. It is it's just a picture of my face, like with the driver's license. So it's like that. I know it's kind of backwards, but
nice.
Patient. Yeah, it's medical marijuana ID card. It expires in a year, so April 30th, and I mean, if I could give a review to these guys, I would give them 5-star, because it was very simple and I love it. I mean, it's just now I can go anywhere in PA and buy bud. It's fantastic. And it's, you know, it's a really simple process, man. It was really great. I can't say more enough about it. It's really simple. And the prices where I was at my first dispensary were really cheap too. They were like $20 for a disposable thing. There was like $30, which this is what I have here. And it's like real strong. Like how they go through it is so, I'm not really like the lingo they use. It's like, oh, here's our menu. And I'm like, okay, menu. And it's like, it's like, do you want grass? Do you want oil? Do you want CBD mixed with oil? Do you want vape? And I'm like, oh my God. Like, I'm like, Jesus Christ. Like, just get me high. Just get me high. I don't care. And she's like, okay, like, you know, what's your vibe like? And I'm like, well, you know, I work a lot. So I just want to come home, you know, hit something, whether it's a vape or, you know, bong a couple times, just like, you know, relax a little bit, get in that, you know, good mindset, good peaceful mindset, hit a nice workout maybe while I'm stoned, because I like doing that. And yeah, just play some video games and meditate and go to sleep. And she's like, okay, we have this and this for you. This is gonna be good for sleep. This is gonna be better for you for the relaxation. I'm like, oh my God, this is like perfect. This is like if you have you know, I don't even know, like a deficiency in vitamin C. It's like, okay, here's your vitamins right now. Like it's exactly what you need, and it works to a T. Like this is what I hit it. It's like exactly what I want. It's the exact vibe, and it's perfect. So I can't recommend it enough. It's wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, that's the one thing that's really cool about having a medical card or having like recreational marijuana, is that you can get strains and stuff that do the task you want it to do. Right. Like,
yep.
The traditional way that we were used to, you know, like we just, all right, whatever, I'll get this. I don't really know what it is, but if it does the job, it does the job, right? But 100%. The world nowadays, man, like you can get stuff that makes you amped up, gets you energetic, makes you like relax, makes you sleep. I don't know, like makes you be more introspective, like all different types of, you know, vibes that you can get from it. It's pretty cool. Yeah, it still just boggles my mind that like this shit is not federally legal. Like it just blows my mind.
I thought it was going to be legalized when what's his name stepped down as chairman. I forget his name, but old guy, really against pot, like really conservative. But I think who do you think's going to be reelected?
Oh man, like if you say who do you think's going to be reelected, then Trump. But like,
elected.
Honestly, dude, like I just don't think Biden can beat Trump. Like, the type of person Trump is, like, Trump is going to absolutely dismantle him. Yeah. Like, he's going to talk about the elephants in the room. He's going to insult him, like, and all that stuff. And, like, I just don't think that Biden has the mental fortitude to defend himself from Trump attacks, especially on a national debate stage. Like, honestly, this virus has been one of the best things for Biden, because it's keeping him out of, you know, national spotlight, and his numbers have actually been trending upwards the less he appears in national spotlight. And I don't think we have ever seen a candidate that starts trending upwards when they appear less. And that's just crazy to me. So honestly, dude, I don't think Biden can beat Trump.
I agree with you 100%. I think that Trump is just one of these characters where he knows how to speak well, and he knows how to tell the narrative that he wants, and he can impose that on, you know, anybody. And here's the thing, man. A lot of people are condemning Trump for, oh, you know, he's not running this country well with the virus. But who, name me one person who you think that could run it better. Like,
yeah, it's just an unprecedented scenario. It's such a multifaceted issue that it's not, oh, this doing this good and doing this bad. Like, there's so much gray area.
And there's the main thing is, and this is what I was listening to on Instagram a little earlier before the pod. It was Prez on Barstool. He was saying, excuse me, it's not political, and we shouldn't make this virus political. We should do what's right. And that's so true. And here's the thing, man. Trump wants to get Elon Musk, and I love Elon Musk so much. Like, he has the balls to go out and say, F California, I'm doing this. He's going to move to, like, what, Nevada or, like, Louisiana, whatever he was going to do.
He's looking at Nevada and Texas, actually.
Oh, there you go. If he moves to Texas, there you go. That'd be even better. But I get the small businesses back. And I'm, like I said, I'm so grateful, man, because I can run my whole platform off of just this. I don't need to move. I don't need a brick and mortar. I could work literally, like, I was talking to my boy Andrew the other day.
Yeah, same here. Like, both our jobs are like that. Like, we're very fortunate to, like, work in technology that, you know, we don't need to show up to actually complete our job.
100%. And he made a good point, dude. Andrew was like, so you could work, you'd be homeless, or you could work in a Starbucks and you'd be okay. I'd be like, yeah, hell yeah, I'd be even better probably, because I could, you know, get some coffee and just, like, have a nice little setting, you know, instead of my cramped room with that. I don't want to turn the camera, but there's, like, an onslaught of clothes and a bunch of other clutter going on here. But yeah, man, it's the main thing is, I think, when it comes to, because let's just be honest, it's going to be Biden, it's going to be Trump, we know that. So you look at the intangibles, and I just think that, you know, a lot of people are saying that the younger voters are going to come in and overweigh Trump, which I don't agree with at all. I think that the silent majority that showed up in the first election with Hillary and Trump is going to come back again, maybe if not stronger. I mean, because it's just, you have to understand, I don't even know Trump's approval rating right now. It might be like, it's really high. I know it was higher than it once was. I mean, what you just made a good point of, that he, when he was meeting, or when he wasn't doing, like, these public appearances.
You mean Biden?
Yeah.
Biden's been trending upwards because, like, he's been appearing less. Like, there's a correlation there. Not saying that's, like, the direct causation to it, but, like, there's definitely a correlation between him not showing up in public spotlight and him trending upwards. You know, as soon as he started doing his stuff from his basement and not being out and about as much, like, he started trending upwards. So there's definitely something to look at there.
Yeah, I just, you know, my thing is, I like Trump, and I really like it's really, here's the thing. And when I say that, people are going to attack me or whatever, but I think, like, in terms of being a leader for this country, and a lot of people like to argue, oh, Biden can have a good cabinet, like with Obama. And dude, what about Obama coming out and say, oh, he's doing a horrible job managing the coronavirus? No one, like, put it this way. If anyone was to come out and say, oh, Obama is this a bit, they'd be labeled a racist. They'd be labeled, oh, you're just a horrible person. Dude, the double standard is so real, and it's just terrible that you can't articulate your feelings about a former president and not be, you know, racial about it. And everyone likes to be the fucking victim, dude, and just make it, you know, that way.
Well, what really just sucks about this whole scenario is, like you said earlier, like, it's become so political, and, you know, once things become political, like, people just lose all sorts of rationality, and it's like, all right, like, this is an unprecedented thing that has happened to our country, right?
Yeah.
In 1918, like, you had the Spanish flu, and I think that infected, like, 500 million people and killed 50. Like, those are just, like, rough estimates.
Yeah.
So, objectively worse so far than coronavirus, who's only, I think, worldwide has infected, like, 4.5 million people, something like that.
Something like that.
But, you know, we're like, the Spanish flu lasted the course of like two and a half years, maybe 1.5 years.
It wiped out. I mean, this is.
Yeah. And it killed a lot of people, and it was a really, really bad time. But are we at that point yet where it's like that level of like fear and terror? I don't know.
No,
I think it's just very interesting seeing like how scared people have become, and like the issue has been made political and people are really, really scared. There's a lot of people that are like, holy crap, like my grandparents might die. My, you know, infant child might die, or even I might die. And like, they're afraid. So nobody's really like thinking rationally of like, all right, what is all that we can do to mitigate this problem and get back to normal life? Because there's only so much we can do, you know, like it's a virus. We can make a vaccine, but like that, we may or may not ever make a vaccine. And if we do make a vaccine, is it going to be 2 months from now? Is it going to be a year from now? Or is it going to be 5 years from now? You know, that's all things that are uncertain. So I think more people need to focus on what we can certainly control in our environment and what we can do to get back to normal life. Because the longer we spend away from normal life, like people are going to become animals. Like, I hate to say it, but like they're going to lose like, you know, generosity and empathy and respecting each other because they've just been in this mentality of like, I'm out for myself. I'm out for myself. I'm out for me and my family. Like, I don't think it's going to be a good thing for society. And it's going to push us farther away from each other.
Yeah. It goes to a more primal instinct for sure. And dude, I want to read you something right now. I don't know if you listen to Dr. Rhonda on Rogan, but there's a really interesting study, and I'll go through that now. It's saying a study, and there were three different studies. A study in Indonesia found that out of the patients that died from COVID-19, 99% of them were deficient in vitamin D, while only 4% of the patients were sufficient in vitamin D died. There was another study of patients in New Orleans found that 85% of the COVID-19 patients in the ICU were deficient in vitamin D, while only 4% of the patients in the ICU had sufficient levels of vitamin D. And the third study was a study in the Philippines that found that for every standard deviation increase in vitamin D, people were 7.94 times more likely to have a mild rather than severe COVID-19 outcome, and almost 20 times more likely to have a mild rather than critical outcome. And 70% of the U.S. population is vitamin D insufficient, and 30% are sufficient. So that is so big. And the thing that I was really, because I'm not a medical professional. I talked to my friend Chris about this because he's going to be a PA. So he knows more about this virus probably than anyone. I mean, just like in my friend group.
In your immediate circle, yeah.
Exactly. That I can talk to and like just try to make sense of it, right? So I was like, there has to be some factor that we're not catching. And because it's infecting, I mean, let's just be honest. It's infecting, you know, it doesn't. In terms of, in the cases, it's not, there's no main group that they're targeting. Sure, people that are, you know, have cardiovascular disease, hypertension, diabetes are more likely to catch it and die from it. But I mean, like kids are being infected, you know, me, like people like me and you are being infected. So like, you know, 20-year-olds, like everyone's being infected with this virus. But I was like, the fact that with vitamin D, that's actually really interesting, because that might be the factor amongst, I mean, this virus is multi different facets. Like there's not just one virus. There's a bunch of different strains of the virus, right? So
yeah, it has different mutations, and you know, some mutations are weaker and some mutations are stronger. Like, and yeah, like, dude, it's just such an intricate topic that like you just brought up these studies, like, okay, they're finding this out about vitamin D, right? Mm. But, you know, the numbers seem to be pretty strong for that vitamin D case. They're like, this might be a factor in, like, whether people, you know, survive having this or don't. But what if that's a factor, what other factors are there that could be out there? And, like, what other factors, like, you know, put you in a position to be more susceptible to dying compared to... Yeah, like it, there's no one really knows, man.
And there's, and I'm not saying that is the main factor, as you know, but I don't want people to get confused. But
I wasn't saying you were, I was just saying, like, I know obviously, those are some very important numbers. Like, that's crazy, like 99%, but like, there could be so many other things too on top of that we're missing.
There's probably, I mean, I don't I'm not a medical expert. I'm way from that, but there's probably hundreds of different factors that play into everything. But I just found that with Dr. Rhonda Patrick, she's like pretty, you know, reliable. And that was just an interesting thing. But yeah, I mean, it's, there's probably hundreds of factors, man. But the one thing I will say, and this is going to sound kind of harsh, is that the people that did die, I mean, like the people that were, you know, 80, I mean, they've lived a life already, but the people that died when they were like, you know, 30, 40, 50 and had hypertension, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, all these, you know, pre-existing conditions. I mean, diabetes, type one, let's throw out because they can't control that really. But it's really tough because it's not that like, it's like, okay, well, here you go. Like, you don't take care of your body, you're going to, you know, die. But it's like, this should be a big wake up call to the people that are overweight, the people that are, you know, smoking, the people that are drinking, is to take better care of your health, right? Like for me, I mean, I probably live one of the healthiest, because I'm always, and it's just like, it's not because I'm anxious and I'm like, oh, I want to, you know, live longer. I mean, there's probably some of that too, but I just want to feel good, man. And
yeah,
as long as I can, and just, you know, be on top of my game. So, you know, I'm eating ginger constantly. I'm eating, you know, all of my vitamins. I'm carb cycling. I mean, no gluten. Like, you know, I tried being vegan for a week, and that was, that was rough on the toilet side, because man, eating all of that fiber, it's like, wow, this is a totally different ball game. I mean, Jesus Christ, you thought a herpes rash burned. Talk about my asshole. Holy
Jesus
shit.
Jesus Christ, man.
It was horrible. But dude, so what, have you been following the UFC at all?
I saw that they just had a fight recently. Yeah, they've been going back to normal, or like not normal, but trying to at least give people entertainment. But no, yeah. I haven't really been keeping up.
Yeah, so there's I mean, I'm really happy obviously because of the first sport.
Well, I'm like looking, trying to find a document I did for a class. I just wanted to go through some like dates with you about the coronavirus.
Oh yeah, please do. Please find that. But the cool thing is, dude, you know, the UFC is going to get so much more popularity just because they're the first organization back, and even more so because it's just like, it's such a primal sport, obviously. And that's why I've been getting into hunting too recently, like with Cam Haynes. He's one of my big inspirations in life. Him, Cam Haynes, Goggins, Rogan. I mean, these guys are just savages.
Yeah, man, I got nothing but respect for people that go in the octagon and literally risk their lives.
Yeah. Like, dude, there was a guy this weekend, I felt horrible because I don't know if, you know, I don't think you watched the fight, but there's this guy, Anthony Smith, who he's like 30 years old, number 4 light heavyweight in the world, just fought for the title and lost, came back and won his last fight against like the number 1 contender. And, dude, he got his ass handed to him. He was looking good in the first couple rounds, but 3rd, 4th, and 5th, it was like all 10-8 rounds, and that's never happened in combat sports history, is a 10-8 round in boxing, in MMA. There hasn't been 3 consecutive 10-8 rounds, because that's just pure dominance. That's just pure, you know, just dominance,
just being outclassed.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's hard to watch, man, because like this guy had teeth falling out. Like he literally took his
Jesus, man,
out and gave it to the ref. He's like, "Yo, hold on to these." And it's even more real because there's no crowd, so you can actually hear the fighters talk. And Glover Teixeira, the number 8 guy in the world who beat him, he's like 40 years old, and he's still like, he looked really good, and he was on top of Anthony. He was like, "Man, sorry, like this is like I got to do what I got to do." And Anthony was like, "It's part of the job, man. Whatever." And there's just like, they had that little cordial, you know, conversation back and forth, that dialogue. And it was just, oh man, I can't get enough of it. I just love that stuff so much. But yeah, nothing but props to the fighters, man. I say this time and time again, you have to respect them. I mean, it's not like basketball where you throw up a shot or you get a rebound, you know, like you twist an ankle. It's like, these people are losing their brains. Like
yeah,
boxing more so, because it's heavily, it's more towards the head. Whereas MMA, there's, you know, leg kicks, takedowns, submissions. There's less likelihood you're going to totally go to the head. But, yeah, dude. But, yeah, there's fights today, actually. It's Alistair Overeem, Walt Harris, this guy literally just lost his daughter, so I hope he wins. And yeah, it's all around. It's a pretty good card of, night of fights, I have to say. I'm actually going to go golfing in a couple of hours. We're going to go over to...
Dude, I am too. I'm going at 12:37 with my buddy.
Nice.
So I'm hype about that. But yeah, I actually found this document.
Nice. Yeah. Hit me with some.
So if you want to, yeah. So in my 400 level class, it was like a deception theory class. So
yeah, I remember. Okay.
Yeah. So we're looking at like how governments, you know, handle deception, counter deception, all sorts of stuff like that. Right. So I compiled like a timeline of the coronavirus starting December 31st. So China reported on December 31st to the World Health Organization several cases of pneumonia in Wuhan.
Right.
Right. January 1st, information is uncovered that confirms several of those infected worked at the, I'm going to butcher this, but it's the Huanan, H-U-A-N-A-N seafood market, which is that wet market, right?
Okay.
So the market was also shut down on that day, and the number of reported infections grows past 40. January 5th, the Chinese officials rule out the possible resurgence of the SARS virus, right? Which also originated in China in 2002. January 7th, China announces to the World Health Organization that they have identified a new virus, right? So January 7th, the World Health Organization knew that there was a new virus on January 7th.
Yeah, so early. But
it took until... January 23rd to quarantine Wuhan. And they knew on January 27th that, hey, this is something new. Like, we haven't seen this before, right?
Right.
And... On January 23rd, the same day China is quarantining Wuhan, the World Health Organization officially states the outbreak did not yet constitute a public emergency of international concern.
Sure.
Well, why is China quarantining Wuhan, man? Like, if it's not a concern, why in the world are they shutting down an 11 million person city?
It's a complete lack of responsibility on their part and just a lack of communication. I didn't even know that, but.
Yeah. And dude, if you want to get more into it, like China canceled all domestic flights and all flights into Wuhan, but all flights out of Wuhan during that time were okay. And it's like, okay, like what is going on here? Right? Like, I refuse to believe that people that work for the Chinese government, people in the World Health Organization are like that dumb that they didn't realize that that's not a good idea, right? Like, someone had to have like let that go on,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, obviously they knew something was happening. They knew they had a virus, but they either it was just a massive oversight, or they just were like, screw it, you know, let it happen. Let's research and analyze and see what happens.
Yeah. You can't have it both ways. You can't have it where you're going to completely quarantine everything, but you're still going to let people go out and leave, risk infecting the entire world. You need to be consistent across the board. Dude, the whole like United Nations Health Organization, I mean, we could totally use a revamp of a system in that, because it's there, but man, it's not doing jack. It's not doing anything. I think that people, like, we just really need a new way of it just seems like superficial. Like, people just go up and show up and it's like, oh yeah, we're at war peace. But like, and I know, like, here's the thing. Bottom line, people can make an argument. Like, I'm not saying you're what you just said is BS. That's not what I'm saying at all. It's correct. But
yeah, all that is like official reports, like of the dates when stuff happened. The only thing we're concerned with, like in our class, is like, okay, well, what does information coming out on these dates suggest is going on, right? Because this is the information that they're releasing to the public. So obviously there's stuff that like, they aren't releasing, you know, and we're just trying to put ourselves in the mindset of like people that are handling this publications, right?
Yeah. And it's the thing is, dude, people can make an argument. They can, if people want to be scared, you can be scared, because you're going to find the numbers and the data that prove that, yeah, this is bad and this is going to get horrible. This is going to be like a Spanish flu. But you look at the numbers that are, you look at the things that you just said, and it's like, oh, the U.S. is to blame? Well, no, you need to look at the facts. And there was just a total lack of communication on China.
Yeah. Like, I'm not saying that China was malicious in their intent. I'm not saying that, you know, they wanted to infect the world, whatever. That is all speculation. But what's fact is that there was a massive oversight in the handling of this initially between the communication with China and the World Health Organization. There's no dispute there. Like, there obviously was a huge disconnect of how serious China thought it was and how serious the World Health Organization thought it was, which was who was supposed to relay the world information, right? So China's quarantining people and they directly say this is not of international concern. Well, look at it now, man. It's pretty damn near the top international concern for everybody.
Yeah, and on top of that, dude, you look at, you know, SARS and what was it? You said 2002, right? I believe. Mm-hmm. 2 decades ago, and you don't think they would take, you know, err on the side of caution and take, you know, proficient measures to so it wouldn't spread? I mean, that's just, to them to be so negligent, it's just, you know, it's ridiculous. And I mean, we could talk about this forever and ever. It's one of these things where you can make whatever case you want. If you want to, you know, be optimistic and be like, yeah, this is going to be okay, get out of your house and just like, first of all, the people that, like, you saw the thing about Fauci on 60 Minutes saying that, you know, the masks, it's just more of a comfortability thing. It's not actually, like, preventing the virus.
Did you see that?
Yeah, it's, and then people, like, they're going to have, like, masks in their cars, right? They're going to be driving around with masks in the car. It's like, no, it doesn't need to be that, it's not that big. It's not that deep. It's not that
well, and, like, most of the people aren't wearing, like, they're wearing like cloth masks or like handmade masks. And it's like, dude, that's doing next to nothing, right? Yeah. Like, it's not designed to stop this tiny ass particle, like getting into your respiratory system.
Flowing through any material that they can make. Well, at least the material with the cloth, but yeah, it's crazy, man. It's crazy. Here's the thing. I'm so, like I said, I'm blessed that we have this job and that I can go out and, like, you know, have a nice day at the range, you know, and get a couple, you know, get a full 18 in. But, dude, I didn't shoot too bad. I shot like an 85 last week.
Damn.
At my one course. Yeah, when I went to Roman Catholic, I was on the golf team and I was like, I was okay. I wasn't like the best, but we had a PGA pro. And I forget his name, but he was so helpful. Like he was one of those guys where he would rather sit and teach and just like chill rather than like.
But he just loves the game that much that he gets more enjoyment of seeing other people like get into it and do well.
Yeah, I can't, like, that's so honorable of him, and just I can't thank him enough. He's such a good guy, man, and he's actually, I believe, he's like another state right now. I haven't heard from him in a long time, but. He taught me everything I know today. I mean, I used to, like, when I picked up the game, I'll be honest, I was like pretty decent at it already. And because I sucked at baseball, I had a horrible baseball swing. So I was like, there's like that old saying, if you're good at baseball, you're going to suck at golf and vice versa. If you're, you know, have a good golf swing, you're going to be trash at baseball. It's so true. I mean, you know, and I couldn't hit for anything. I was like, Jesus Christ. But then when I picked up a golf club and I swung it, I was like, okay, like, you know, and I would notice, like, my ball would go, it wouldn't go that far at first, but it would be straight. I would be hitting it and I wouldn't, like, you know, chip it and it would go like into the grass, or it would be like, you know, veering off into the right or going to the left. It would be, you know, consistently straight. And I was like, okay, like, this is pretty cool. And like all the instructors were like, yeah, like, you have a, you know, pretty natural, you know, swing. It's nice. And I picked up the game and I love it ever since. It's the thing I like most about golf is the challenge. Cause it's, you know, it's.
Yeah. You play yourself, you play against yourself.
Yeah, exactly. The individual effort is, that's definitely something I can't get enough of.
Yeah.
It's so fast.
Like, you play against yourself, your own emotions, your own like thought process. Like I'm not a great golfer by any means. Like, I usually shoot in the 90s, like on an average day.
That's okay, man.
But I basically just live for like those few great shots that I will hit when I'm out there. Like, I'm gonna hit a few shots that I'm like, yeah, like that was fucking nice. Like, I hit the piss out of that ball.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like, that's what it's all about. Is like, you know, I'm going to have holes where I just blow up and nothing's going the way I want it to. And I can't putt, whatever. But right. I'm going to have a couple of shots and a couple of drives where I'm like, you know what, like maybe I can do this. Like, it's like, it's almost like an addiction, right? Like you just get that little dopamine hit and you're like, yeah, like, dude, you know, I'm coming back. Like I can do this. Right. So yeah, it's exactly. fun.
Yeah.
The worst part about my game is like by far my putting, dude. Like I can't putt really? For shit. Yes. Like a 3-putt is like great for me. I'm like, dude, sick. But like, you know, like when I go out, like I'll hit my driver off the first tee box. Right. And I'm like, all right, if my driver's doing good, I'm going to stick with it. But if I hit one bad driver shot, I'm like, all right, I'm hitting my 4-iron. Right. I'm just going to hit it straight and put it in the fairway. Right.
Yep.
So once I started doing that, I started, you know, getting to the green and 2-3, like a lot more consistently.
Yeah.
But my putting is just like fucking terrible, man. Like I just cannot putt. I don't know what it is. Like I practiced putting a lot in high school and like I just never got better at it.
The thing thing about putting is it's every single course you go to. I mean, have you golfed at this course before that you're going to?
Yeah. Okay. I've golfed there like probably like 10 times.
Okay, cool. So then you know the greens. Like I didn't realize that when I was young and so naive and green to the game, I was like, yeah, like all greens are, you know, they're going to be the same speed.
Hell no, dude.
Fuck no. I wish that was the case.
Hell no.
It's like Walnut Lane, which is where I used to play at Roman. They're slow as molasses. I mean, you can hit the ball, you know, as hard as you can, and it's going to go like 2 feet. It's you have to really put some effort into putt. But then there's other courses like where I used to go to White Marsh Valley. And even if you tap it, it's like, oh, it's in the bunker, the other side of the green. You know what I mean? It's those type of things where you have to play out in your head. And I mean, what I do is I really just try to look at the texture of the grass and like the quality of it. The better quality I found of the green, the more fast it's going to be. And it's just really about practice. And like, you know, you have to squat down and like look at the ball and okay, like what's the tilt going? And okay, the wind, you have to factor that in too. And then just there's a whole bunch of different variables, but you can get good at putting. I mean, my worst thing about my game is I wouldn't say my driver, but definitely like when I go off the tee, it's like, you know, because I can drive pretty far. Like some, it really depends on the hole, but my direction, it's like I'll have to put some effort into like really finding, because if there's like some holes, you know, they're clear as day, you can just hit it straight and that's fine. I mean, that's cool with me, but there are other holes where it like takes a weird bend and there's like a curve and like mine goes straight. So I have to really like, I'm like, okay, like there's trees right here. Can I hit it over the tree? Or like, cause it's not, I don't have any slice in my game. It's just, it's literally straight, which I mean, I guess it's okay, but it's just, you know, you don't want to, you need some slice. You need to learn how to control that. And I wish I learned like how to, where like when you were chipping, you could like backspin on it. I want to learn how to do that. You just have to like really like tilt your club high. So the face is like completely open and just really like get under it and like, curve that backspin. But yeah, man, I love the game so much. I'm so eager to play this today. It's going to be a great day.
Yeah, you definitely have to let me know how you're doing, because we'll probably be – what time are you going? Like, we'll probably be on the course around, like, the same time as each other.
Yeah, I have to go to the bank in, like, half hour, and then I'm going to go – we're probably going to tee off at, like, 1. So, yeah, we'll be –
Yeah, like, basically at the same time.
Yeah, I'll text you. I'll be like, yeah, I'm fucking playing. Like, shit, man, you jinxed me.
Well, so, dude, like – I mean, man, like I know I go out with a lot of my buddies, and like, dude, I think the number one thing that like, I'm not, like I said, I'm not a good golfer by any sense. Like there's people that are a lot better than I am, but like, I'm good enough to like have a fun time. Right.
Yeah.
And that's like, you know, like when you're shooting like 120 and like, it's not very fun for you. Right. Like, I was there at one point and you're like, dude, like this fucking sucks. Like, you know, like I can't hit the ball, whatever, whatever. Like, dude, I'm telling people, like I try to tell people all the time, like if you want to save strokes, like when I hit it, like me and my buddies, like depending on who I'm play with, like we either be like, all right, dude, you hit your first one OB, like hit another one. If this goes OB, we'll count it, like whatever. And some of my buddies were like, dude, you go OB first hit or like off the tee box, like boom, like we're counting it, right?
Yeah.
So it's just like feeling out like who you're gonna play with, right? And I'm like, dude, if you can't hit your driver, like, which most people can't consistently, like, mm-hmm. I'm inconsistent with it. Some days, like, it's fucking straight as hell and it's perfect. And other days I'm hooking, and other days I'm slicing. But dude, 4-iron for me is like automatic. Like, I can hit that club a nice, you know, like 180, 200, relatively straight, maybe with like a little hook, a little draw, you know what I mean? And it's going to be in the fairway. So I just started doing that, and like, my game has just improved dramatically.
Yeah, I mean, I started doing that, and I kind of geared up to the driver. And yeah, I mean, like, my driving iron, I have a 5 where I can just crush it, man. I can do like at least 200, like, and I love that club. I mean, I had a time where I was in, I hit double eagle. I was fucking crazy. I hit it, and it was obviously a par 5, and I drove it literally onto like the fringe. I don't know how I did this, but it was the farthest drive I've ever had in my life. It probably had to be like four something, and I crushed it. I mean, I wasn't in a good mood at all because I was like hitting pretty shitty that day. So I was like, all right, you know what? Fuck it. I'm just gonna crush it, and like wherever it goes. And it was just like the Happy Gilmore thing. Fucking get that twist and that power and the man. I fucking killed it, and it was like a. I can, and you know how like when you have a good hole and you can feel the momentum just building and you have a good sense of yourself. I was like, okay, this is probably my best hole I've ever played ever. Just relax, you know, don't like, just try to get birdie, right? You know, I've what, 3 more strokes to get birdie. Just chip it on, 2 putt, we're good, right? So I looked at it, and you know, Tiger Woods, I think he hit like birdie, like, you know, that Masters putt where he chipped it, he's on the fringe, and then it just like rolls, and then it hangs in the cup, and then it just goes in.
If you showed me it, I'd probably like, yeah, he has so many, he's like he has so many chip ins and crazy shit that he's done, man.
It's like, ridiculous. Yeah. Tiger's the guy. People like to argue like Jack Nicklaus and Tiger. It's like, for me, it's like Tiger. But Jack Nicklaus is good as in his own right. He has 18 majors. So I didn't, you know, I haven't really seen his highlights, but anyway, it's like 15 feet from the cup, and I'm on the fringe, and there's a little break to the left, and I'm like, okay, like, got to chip it a little right, and we'll see where this goes. So I don't know, like, God was in my hands when I was hitting this thing. And dude, my wedge, like, I love it. I mean, I just love hitting that fucking club. Like, whether I'm like, you know, I'll even hit it if it's like 100 plus, just because I can like really get under it. And, you know, at that point, I'm just trying to be safe. I'm not really trying to be too aggressive. So I might just like lay up right before hit and just hit it again. I love that club so much. So I hit it, and it's like starting to roll. And then I'm like, I just like looked away because I was like, okay, it's just going to, you know, go. And then I was actually playing with a couple of buddies, and they were going, oh. And I was like, oh, they're like, oh, Sean, look. And I'm like, look back at my ball, and I'm like, oh, fuck. And it's still rolling. So I'm like, okay. And then it just fucking comes up. And I thought it was going to go over because it, you know, no one reached the green yet. I just went up, and everyone's on their like third and fourth shot. So the flag was still in the cup, right? So I was like, man, it's going to go over. And I'm like thinking about this where I have like 2 seconds in my head before, you know, the ball goes in. I'm like, what the hell's going to happen? It hits the flagpole while it's going in. And it does like a 360 where it goes in and it just rotates and then it stays. I was like, holy shit, I just made double eagle. That's nuts.
Yeah.
That was my best hole of all time. That was
yeah. I've only had one eagle in my life. It was on par 5. It was at like our home course and for like high school, right?
Right.
And it was just like practice day. Drive the par 5. It's like one of those goes up to the right. You know, you got bunkers on the right side and one bunker on the left side.
Right.
I had a pretty good drive. I'm like, all right, like, you know, I'm probably par this. Like, you know, like, it's pretty good drive. Like, back then, I was just starting out in golf. Like, it was like my second year, like, playing golf seriously. And I'm like, all right, like, I might make par here. Like, I'm like, shit, dude. Like, this is great. Like, I have a good drive. I hit my 3H, my 3 hybrid. Goes off to the right, and there's like a 2 bunkers right on the right side of this green, and then there's like 2 pine trees like kind of like in the middle of those bunkers,
right?
So it's a really weird like
how it's set up. There's like shadow on the green. It's like the trees are that close.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like, Yeah, like depending on the time of the day, there's gonna be shadow, but it's just like weird that like there's even trees there. Like
yeah,
it's just really weird. And I hit it and I'm like between like the two trees and the two bunker, like the two trees and the two bunkers, and I'm like, all right, well, I could either go left of the tree, right of the tree, or between these two trees to like tack the green. And I'm like, all right, I'm gonna go left because the way the green was, it's like the bunker and there's like this little hill on the green, and then like if there's this like basically like slope that feeds right down into where the pin is, like I'm gonna try and hit that little hill and excuse me, ride it down the slope, try to get close to the pin. I hit it, it hits right where I was aiming, which I was like, oh shit, like that, nice, like you know, like this is awesome, like I'm having a great hole.
Right,
yeah, and then my other buddy's like, he's like, that's a great shot, Beav. And I'm like, oh shit, like it is a great shot, like it's going right to the pin, and like boom, it just goes in. I'm like, I cannot believe that just happened. Like it was awesome, like it was crazy. God.
That's ridiculous. Yeah, man, that's what I'm saying, man. Like that's such a good description. You have that little hits of dopamine that keeps you coming back, and it's like, yeah, I can get good, I just have to keep practicing. And then
it's like, why can't I do that every hole? I'd be fucking pro. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think it's like when I'm at the range, it's just myself. Sometimes I'll have like some buddies, but it's just like when I'm by myself, like in my mind, like I'll put some headphones in, just relax. It's like, it's only me out there on the range. But like when I'm looking at other people hit, it's like, man, I have other people watching me now. It's like, I don't want to fuck up. You have like all these external like anxieties and things that you're thinking about. And it's like, don't make it that hard. Just like, just fucking hit the ball. It's not that hard. It's like, just make it simple.
Yeah. I took my buddy to the range. He doesn't really golf at all. I think it was like his like third time at the range. And it was just like cool watching him to be like, yeah, like I started where you started, where you can't even hit the fucking ball, dude. Yeah. Like he whiffed so many times that I'm like, Jenkins, like keep your head down. Like you're looking to see where you're hitting the ball, like before you're even finished with your swing, buddy. And it's like, no one that's like hitting the ball well, like you have to keep your head down. Like I hate to say it, but I'm like, Jenkins, like I hate to tell you, man, but like when you do hit the ball, like it's not gonna go that far. Like you're gonna be able to see it like where it goes, you know. Like you don't need to be looking for it. Like
you're gonna
hit it like 100 yards, right? Like it's all right. Like everybody starts where you starts. Like don't try and kill the ball, just try and make solid contact. Right. And once you start getting that, like, okay, like I'm trying to hit the ball hard, I'm trying to hit the ball far, you know, and like I'm just swinging way too hard overall. And he started swinging slower, just swinging for contact, and he started, you know, putting them out there, and they were straight too. So I'm like, there you go, man. Like you don't, like, let the club face do the work for you. Like that's why it's there. Like don't try and destroy the ball.
Yeah, dude, my one friend Chris, he's is your friend a lefty?
No, he's a righty.
Righty, okay. So my friend's a lefty, so I've, you know, I'm righty, and I was like, he couldn't even hit the ball, like you're probably your friend. And we were at the range the other day. I'm actually taking him golfing with my little brother, who's a lefty as well. And he kills the ball. He kills the ball, just like I do. And I helped his swing a lot, because he's a really good baseball swing. So, you know, you need to work on the golf swing. So I was like, okay, you got to open your legs up. You got to make the ball go just inside your, well, at him, for him, that would be your right foot. So you can, you know, just line it up like that. And he was swinging. He has a good swing. It's just, he needs, like, mechanically, he just needs to fix a couple things. And then he's
too many moving parts. Shoulders are moving. Heels are coming up. And like now there's so much room for error. Like,
exactly. So we're going to do everything today, but we're going to play a full 18, man. And I can't wait. It's going to be fantastic.
Is that going to be his first full 18 ever?
Yep.
Yeah. I pray for him. I remember my first full 18, dude. Yeah. I pray for you too, man. Like, cause like I went out with my buddy and his dad, who were like, you know, they've golfed together like for the last couple of years. And it was me and my other buddy, both our first days ever golfing. And yeah, man, it's a humbling experience for sure.
Yeah, seriously. But yeah, man. So we got to do this again sometime. We definitely got to do this like next week or whatever.
Talk about
something. But yeah, man, it was a pleasure, bro. Yeah, so I don't have any sponsors. I wish I could shout something out, but do you have any projects coming out? Anything I can shout out?
Not really, man. Like, I'm just basically been building up my LinkedIn and getting ready for, you know, sales and at a tech company. So,
all right, well,
you know, just guys, been gearing up for that, reading a lot of books.
Yeah, me too. I've been reading Business of the 21st Century by Robert Kiyosaki, and then I have How Successful People Think, John Maxwell. I'm looking at that Dean Graziosi book too. That'd be nice. I know, dude, Managing Oneself by Peter Drucker. Have you read that yet?
No, I haven't.
It's a 30-page book. You could probably finish it today if you wanted to. It's Managing Oneself. It's so, I love it. It's really great. It's very practical on how to just manage your life, exactly what it says.
This is what I've been reading right now. Spin Selling.
Spin Selling?
Yeah, it's all about like the larger sale. Okay. And like business to business sales.
Yeah.
And you know, like what works in business to business sales compared to like business to consumer. And
yeah,
you know, they did like, actually they did like, it's one of the few research studies on sales. Like they analyzed like 35,000 sales calls and like interviewed so many people. So they got so much data on like, this is statistically what works, it statistically doesn't work, right? So I thought it was an interesting book that actually had like, you know, data behind it. And like, there's a lot of sales books that are just like bullshit, dude. There's a lot of people that they just posting bullshit about sales, like, and it's ridiculous. But yeah, that's a whole other different discussion.
Yeah, it's a whole other topic. Go check out Ryan Beaver, Ryan Bieber. On LinkedIn, at Oracle, one of the best software companies in the world. And yeah, guys, with that, thank you as always. And we'll tune in for next time. Thank you guys so much.
All right. Peace out, Sean.
Thanks, buddy. Have a good round. We'll text you. All right.
Yeah. You too. Let me know how you're shooting.
Bogies and stogies. Let's get it.
All right. See you, man.
All right. Take care, buddy. Bye-bye.